I have a few questions that I would like to ask the children today. What is this to the children? Yes, sir. Bread. Very good. That's bread. This has been around our house for a while. I bought it some time ago. So it's, if anybody'd like to eat it, you're welcome to ask me after services. Bread. What is this? What kind of bread? Thank you, Leslie. Unleavened bread. David? Matzah. Blessed by the rabbi. You're right. Okay. Unleavened bread. What is the difference between leavened bread and unleavened bread? Very good. Thank you. Leavened bread rises. It's much thicker and bigger than regular unleavened bread, isn't it? And unleavened bread is, guess what? Flat. I don't know about you, but I personally prefer egg onion. I see a lot of nods going on, and it's too early to sleep, so I can think a lot of people agree with me. What does leaven picture in the Bible, children? What does leaven picture in the Bible? Leslie? As sin. Excellent. Good answer. It does picture. Does it always picture sin in the Bible? It does not. What else does it picture? Doesn't Christ say that the kingdom of God is like leaven? So sometimes it pictures something very positive, not always sin, right? In the parables that we find in Matthew 13 and Luke 13, Christ says that sometimes the kingdom of God is pictured as leaven. Why is that? Leslie again? It will rise, okay. That's good. What else? What else does the bread do besides rise when it's got leaven in it? Does it expand? It gets bigger and bigger and bigger, doesn't it? And God's kingdom, of course, is going to grow from Jerusalem and get bigger and bigger and bigger in the kingdom of God. Well, as we near the days of unleavened bread, by the way, thank you, all of you who made contributions. Good. We got some smart kids, don't we, in our class, in our services today. But as we're nearing the days of unleavened bread, why do we observe these days? Don't have to answer. These are rhetorical questions. What is the reason for us to do that today? Well, first of all, let's notice a little history by going back to Exodus chapter 12. Exodus chapter 12 and verse 15. We clearly are instructed to eat unleavened bread and to put out the leaven during the days of unleavened bread. It's pretty smart of God to call these the days of unleavened bread, isn't it? Because that's exactly what they are. Exodus 12, verse 15, we read, 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread. On the first day you shall remove leaven from your houses. For whoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. So it was pretty important that the ancient Israelites were to practice this command by God and de-leaven their homes. Now bear in mind, it was a little easier for them than for us. Most of the Israelites didn't live in a 3,500 square foot home, right? Many of them, in fact, at this particular time, were leaving their homes in haste. And the homes that they had were homes of slaves, probably one room. In fact, there were probably two or three families that lived in one room. They were small houses. They were easier to clean than they are today. Just so we can get a little orientation. Let's drop down to verse 17. Once again, we see this repeated. So you shall observe the feast of unleavened bread, for on this same day I have brought you out, your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as an everlasting ordinance. And of course, that's talking about the first day of unleavened bread. And we begin, as I explained last Sabbath in the sermon I gave on the night to be much observed on that topic, we begin the evening then of the first day of unleavened bread. We remember our exit from spiritual Egypt and our journey following God, the pillar of fire and the cloud of the day, as it talks about in another place in Exodus. Let's drop down to verse 19. For 7 days no leaven shall be found in your houses, since whoever eats what is leavened, that same person will be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he's a stranger or a native to the land. You shall eat nothing leavened. In all your dwellings you shall eat unleavened bread. So once again, several times God repeats this admonishment and command of the ancient Israelites, and it's important. We all know that when God repeats something, it is important to Him, and therefore should be important to us. Let's go to chapter 13, one page further back in the Bible, in my Bible, Exodus 13, verse 7. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days, and no leavened bread shall be seen among you, nor shall leaven be seen among you in all your quarters. In all your quarters, interesting word in the Hebrew, gabul, G-E-B-U-L, which can mean borders, coasts, bounds, landmarks, space, limit, territory, region. So it's a pretty broad definition of where the leaven is to be removed from. So God's instructions show that we should de-leaven all of our areas for which we are responsible, which normally would include our homes, sometimes our cars. I know usually that's what Linda assigns to me, you know, go de-leaven the car. And I personally like to pay somebody $35 to do that for me. So I go down to the de-leavening, otherwise known as the car wash, with the full service inside and out. I get my car de-leavened. Some of you may practice something else. You may feel like you need to go through the drudgery of actually doing that yourself. Some people like to do that. Doesn't matter how you do it, just do it, right? Make sure that it's done. In some cases, we have personal workspace. We have an office or we have a desk. And, you know, we should normally take out all that stuff we've had in our desk throughout the year that we've snacked on and make sure that area is also cleaned. But, you know, many centuries ago, Galileo wrote this. Some wisdom. I do not feel obliged to believe that the same God who has endowed us with sense, reason and intellect has intended us to forego their use. I thought that's a pretty smart statement. God expects His people to be sensible. I've used this example before, but it stands out foremost in my mind when we talk about de-leavening. One lady many, many years ago told me that she used to take out her husband's suits and take the pants off the hanger and turn down the cuffs and vacuum the insides of the cuffs, just in case crumbs fell while he was eating lunch and fell into his cuffs of his suits. Well, I solved the problem by, I don't wear cuffs on most of my pants. But I told her, I thought, that, you know, that's a little over the top. I don't know that that's what God intended us to do. It's a little extreme. And, you know, as we discussed it further, she said, well, maybe you're right. For years, Linda and I would take our toaster and we would spend a lot of time trying to clean it. You ever tried to clean all the leaven out of your toaster? It's a big job. Well, we found out that Costco has toasters for $19.95. So I personally have found out that it's a lot easier, like going to the car wash, to just throw the toaster out every year and get a new one. I know some. I see some people nodding. You may choose to do that, just like I did. you know, that's between you and me and God, but I have de-leavened my house of my cluttered leavened toaster in that way. I've gotten the leaven out of our house and done it in a little easier way than the drudgery of spending 3 hours with a toothbrush cleaning my toaster. I think we get the idea. Like Galileo said, he's given a sense. We need to be sensible about de-leavening our homes. Because some people, I have found over the years, I've been around the church for, well, I'm embarrassed, well, almost to tell you that it's been nearly 60 years that I've been around the church. And I've seen a lot of people go to the extreme of forgetting about the real reason for the days of unleavened bread by becoming so obsessed with cleaning the leaven out of their houses. This year on Facebook, we noticed that in January and February, people are already talking about, I have de-leavened part of my house. And I'm going, wow. It's not 4 months of unleavened bread. It's 7 days of unleavened bread. Now, sometimes if you live in, like I said, one of those big houses, you have to take time. And sometimes required. I know years ago, we would de-leaven some of our bedrooms first, and we'd put these signs up. And they were like red circles with leaven written in it and a bar across it. You know, and so we weren't leavening our, you know, we weren't taking snacks to bed and things like that. It was just a reminder. But that was just a few days before we actually entered into the days of unleavened bread. You know, my point is, I think God has given us good sense, and we shouldn't focus so much on de-leavening physically that we forget about the more important spiritual part of the days of unleavened bread, which is what I'd like to focus my attention on for the balance of my sermon. Let's see what Christ said about leaven. I think you might find it is interesting because it doesn't focus so much on the physical part, but on the spiritual part, which I think is where our focus ought to be. We do physically de-leaven, as I believe Paul told us we should. I'll get to that scripture in just a moment. And as I believe God felt it was important for the Israelites, it's important for us to do it. But let's first go to Luke 12, verse 1. Let's see what Christ said about leavening, and then we'll talk about what Paul said about leavening. And I think we'll see very clearly that there's got to be a balance here between physical de-leavening, but a more important emphasis on the spiritual de-leavening that takes place in our lives. Clearly, our children understand what leaven pictures. So they know where we should put the emphasis. We have to be very careful not to put the emphasis on the wrong syllable, right? Let's go to Luke 12, verse 1. In the meantime, when an innumerable multitude of people had gathered together so that they trampled one another, he began to say to the disciples, first of all, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. What was the leaven of the Pharisees? Well, if we finish reading the sentence, Luke tells us exactly what it was, which is hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is the leaven of the Pharisees. That's a spiritual concept, isn't it? For the Christian, that's a spiritual concept. Now, we're not going to go to Matthew 23, where Christ elaborated the hypocrisy of the Pharisees, but it is renowned. You know, he talked about you guys go to your plants and you pick every tenth leaf off and tithe that. You know, you get down to the finite things of the laws of God. He said you should do those things, should tithe, but don't leave the weightier matters of the law undone. And that's what we're talking about today. A weightier matter of the law of God is not so much that we get preoccupied with, you know, making sure the 10th orange or the 10th apple or the 10th grape is entered into our tithe, or the value thereof, but the more important concept of the leaven of the Pharisees, hypocrisy. Now, what is hypocrisy for the Christian? Well, you can ask any of our kids, because children are the ones who can spot hypocrisy faster than the rest of us. I know that because I was once a kid. We all know that, don't we? I grew up literally on the campus in Pasadena, California, Ambassador College. We rented a house from the church and we lived there. And some of the things that I saw confirmed to me that I didn't want to be a minister of the Church of God. I'll be very honest with you. I didn't want to be a minister, even though I went to Ambassador College primarily on peer pressure. And when I graduated, I told the administrators, I don't want to be a minister. And they said, okay, we're not going to send you out in the ministry. I said, thank you very much. And I went and I sold computers for about 3.5 years before I became convinced that God was calling me into the ministry. But some of the things that I saw convinced me that people who said one thing on the Sabbath did another thing during the week. That's hypocrisy, isn't it? We know what hypocrisy is. People who profess to be Christian one day a week but do something 6 days of the week that is different from that. We behave differently among our friends or our co-workers or our family or when we're away from the church. That's hypocrisy. And that's the kind of leaven that Christ admonished us to beware of, to avoid. That's a weightier matter of the law. Let's go to Matthew 16. Matthew 16, where Christ talks about another form of leaven. Matthew 16 and verse 5. Matthew 16, 5. Now when his disciples had come to the other side, this is talking about the other side of Galilee, the river or the lake, they had forgotten to take bread. Then Jesus said to them, take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, we know what that is, and of the Sadducees. Now during Christ's day, there were the Pharisees and the Sadducees. They were religious parties of the Judean Jews that were opposed to each other. I think probably one of the best comparisons I could make today is Republicans, Democrats. Now we know they agree on everything, right? Well, no, sometimes Republicans and Democrats disagree with each other just because they're Republicans or Democrats, right? And this is the same way it was in the time of Christ. This puppet government that was underneath the Roman authority, the Roman government, among the Jews, was divided into a couple of parties, and the two major parties were the Republicans, were the Pharisees and the Sadducees, right? And there was a little third party called the Zealots. The Zealots were the kind of the protesters, the political ultra-right. They were the ones who wanted to rise up and throw off the Roman yoke. And the Pharisees said, well, don't be too hasty here. Let's make sure that we keep our political balance going. And the Sadducees were the conservative ones among the party. They wanted to focus on more of the religious details and the religious arguments that took place. Now, we are not told in great detail about the Sadducees and what their particular leaven was. At least not until we get to Acts 23. I'm not going to go there, but we do know from what Paul said in Acts chapter 23 that the Sadducees denied the supernatural. So they actually denied the existence of God. So here were Jews, religious Jews, but they were more humanistic. You know, they believed that God kind of dwelt within you and that could help you, do your best. We have philosophies today, that coincide with that particular teaching. And we're also told by Paul in that same chapter, Acts 23, that they didn't believe in the resurrection of the dead. So here were people, Sadducees, who were more humanistic, They didn't believe in a literal resurrection of the dead. And Paul actually used that in his argument to polarize the group he was speaking to and save his life in Acts 23. But again, you can read that on your own. I didn't want to have to kind of walk through that whole thing. But just to point out that there is 11 of the Sadducees that we would call today a doctrinal drift. You ever heard that expression before? There was a doctrine that Christ taught in the first century. And if you look now in the 21st century at most churches, wow, it is totally different, isn't it? Doctrinal drift has happened over 2,000 years to the point now that you cannot recognize first century Christianity in large part. People meet on the wrong day. They observe the wrong holidays. They think God is someone different than they are. You know, there's a lot of confusion religiously out there now, isn't there? It's called doctrinal drift. And that can happen to any of us, can it? And that's the warning I think Christ is talking about. You know, how far removed have we gotten from first century Christianity? What do we argue about? What do we talk about? Calendar issues. What day we should meet on sometimes. That's a warning about the leaven of the Sadducees. Have we drifted doctrinally away from God? Some people have these kind of pet doctrines they keep, you know, close to their chest and they don't want to discuss with other people. Or maybe they do and they kind of do it in the back of the room because they know they might be corrected or challenged. I believe Christ identifies that, at least in principle, as the leaven of the Sadducees. Something he tells us to beware of. Take heed, he says in verse 6, Matthew 16, and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. I remember all of our instructors down through the years and teachers I've known in the ministry, they always have said, stay close to the trunk of the tree, right? What are the basic Christian sound principles? Let's focus on those. Oftentimes, if we get out on a twig, what happens to us? That can snap off, right? We can lose our footing, be in dangerous positions. Make sure we're not victims of doctrinal drift that can occur. Let's go back to Mark chapter 8. Mark 8 and verse 15. I'd like to talk about another leaven that Christ identifies. Mark 8 and verse 15. It's kind of interesting. He always talks about these things in the context of bread. Either they forgot to bring bread or there's a miracle of bread or whatever. But notice verse 14. The disciples had forgotten to take bread and they did not have more than one loaf with them. I think I would have gotten on the bread guy at this point, don't you? It's been a couple of times now. He's missed the bread, and you've got 12 guys who could probably eat a lot of bread. In verse 15, and he charged them, saying, take heed. Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. We've already discussed that. That's the leaven of hypocrisy. And the leaven of Herod. On Herod, you talk about character. Herod is a title like king, and there were a bunch of Herods, and they were primarily one family. They weren't Jewish. They weren't Roman. They were Idumean, probably from the area that we would know today as Petra, where there was a fortress up there. But these characters were pretty interesting because they were known for their thievery. They were known for their political intrigue. They were known for their power struggles politically. They were known as people who would do just about anything to hold their position of power. They were known for their carnality, their adultery. The Herods would sleep with just about anybody. They would kill anybody that got in the way. They would do just about anything to keep their position. We call this carnality. They were just raw, carnal people. Possessed with carnality. The leaven of Herod. Herod was involved in a great deal of lying, political wheeling and dealing, abusing of power in his office, adultery, and general all-around carnality and worldliness. Worldliness. Christ identifies worldliness and carnality as one of the great leavens that we should be warned against. It's interesting that in James 1, verse 27, we find pure religion defined. Pure religion. Pure religion is visiting orphans and widows. And a lot of us stop right there and we get this kind of guilt feeling because we don't do it enough, do we? None of us, probably in this room, visits widows and orphans like we'd like to. And we have them among our congregations. But the next phrase is even more important. Pure religion is visiting orphans and widows, according to James, and keep oneself unspotted from the world. To keep oneself unspotted from the world, that is the leaven of Herod. To be so deeply engrossed and involved in what's going on in the world and its carnality and the banal, carnal things that people do to one another that are unkind and ungodly. That's the leaven of Herod. And it's so easy, isn't it, today to be drawn into that intrigue, isn't it? Facebook, Instagram, it just invites us to jump on a bandwagon, get right in there, get involved in the intrigue of politics. And a lot of people fall prey to that, and we jump into it. And we say, yeah, he's a liar. Yeah, get him out of office. Yeah, do this. We easily get onto those bandwagons because it's emotional. It happens all too easily for all of us. So we see these leavens that Christ tells us to avoid. So what does that have to do with the days of unleavened bread and the reminders that we have to get some of these leavens out of our house? You see, Christ did not put the emphasis on getting the crumbs out of your coat sleeves or, making sure your car is scrubbed clean of any crumbs, because it's impossible. We know that. Leaven is in the air. It's impossible to get rid of every ounce of leaven, right? So we have to be sensible about it. But what is that reminding us of? And where should our focus be? Well, the admonition of Christ is beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, hypocrisy. Beware of the leaven of the Sadducees, which is doctrinal drift. Be aware and avoid the leaven of Herod, which is worldliness and carnality, falling prey to just us being humans in the raw form of carnality. So that's where we should focus our de-leavening efforts. Let's go to 1 Corinthians 5 and see what Paul has to say about the subject of leaven. 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 7. It would seem from the context that Paul writes this letter to the church at Corinth, which had a reputation of being a pretty carnal church. And I have had the blessing of visiting ancient Corinth. And there are a couple of striking landmarks that have been unearthed by the archaeologists in Corinth. Corinth, of course, is right on the isthmus of the Greek world. Two seas come together right there at Corinth. In fact, there's a four-mile isthmus that, interestingly enough, Nero started digging a channel. Because otherwise you got to sail all the way around the peninsula of Greece to get to the other side, to get to the Aegean Sea. And so sailors were trying to figure out a way, how do we get across this four-mile isthmus? And that's where Corinth was. It was a big port city. And they have excavated that whole area now. But anyway, I want to get back to the story of Nero. Nero was going to build a canal, and he started digging it. And his advisors convinced him that the sea level was 20 feet higher on one side of that isthmus than the other. And he was afraid that he would flood the Aegean Sea if he did that. So he stopped. It's kind of an interesting story. Now, since then, they have a canal that they've made there so ships can go through. But Nero had the idea. It was avant-garde at the time, but his advisors misplaced some advice and he didn't accomplish one of the great channels and canals of the world. So getting back to the unearthing of all the artifacts around Corinth, there are three big famous things that they have unearthed in ancient Corinth. Number one is the Temple to Zeus, or Apollo. Gigantic Corinth. A lot of pagan religion there. The other is a temple way up on top of the mountain that was the Temple to Diana, which was famous for its temple prostitutes. And since it was a port city, sailors from all over the world would go there, and they couldn't wait to get to Corinth. Because you go up to the top of the hill, you just hike to the top of the hill, you pay a fee to the temple guardian, and you were able to go into the temple prostitutes. And that was a form of religious practice at the time. The other thing that they've unearthed now are caves in the cliffs right beside the port that were once used as brothels. So you get all these sailors coming into port, and you get the brothels, you get the temple prostitutes, and you got the big pagan temple. That's what Corinth was known for. That's what it's known for today. Those are the things they've unearthed there. So the culture in Corinth at the time of Paul was pretty wretched. And there was a church there. And that's why Paul talks so much about fornication and adultery and sex sins in these two letters, because they were in the middle of this melting pot of what you would call sexual debauchery, sometimes done in the name of religion. Let's begin reading here, 1 Corinthians 5, verse 7. Paul admonishes them, therefore purge out the old leaven. What would the old leaven be? Hypocrisy? Doctrinal drift? I mean, what kind of doctrinal drift did they have in the Corinth church? Well, they were tolerating a member of the church who was sleeping with his stepmom. They thought that was okay. It was very tolerant. And thirdly, the leaven of worldliness, carnality. Those are the ones that Christ cautioned us against, right? Those leavens. So he says, therefore, purge out the old leaven. So here's this admonition. We've got to put these things out of our lives that you may be a new lump, since you are truly unleavened. They were literally, physically keeping the days of unleavened bread during the time they received this letter from Paul. That's the way we take that expression. For indeed, our Passover was sacrificed for us. Therefore, verse 8, let us keep the feast, that is the same feast we're about to keep, of unleavened bread, not with the old leaven, nor with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. It's really interesting that Paul would juxtapose these four principles. Malice and wickedness on one side, and sincerity and truth on the other. It is interesting that malice is what? What is malice? Well, we get the word in the Latin and also in Spanish, mal. What does it mean? It means bad, right? It's an evil way of thinking. It's bad thoughts. Bad, if I can put it, patterns of thinking. So malice is evil thinking, and wickedness is the evil way of living that comes from evil thinking. So malice comes first, and then wickedness, which is the act of carrying out the malice in our minds. So, you know, we ask the question, where does sin begin? Because the children identified 11 in the Bible as sin. Where does sin begin? Right here between our ears, doesn't it? It begins right here. Sin is born, it's germinated in our brains. We think the thought, and then wickedness is acting out the thought. You just don't sin without thinking about it. You know, the thought at least has to cross your mind. Now, some people with very little conscience can allow that process to take only a split second, right? But largely, it starts in the brain. We think about it, and then we think, well, maybe I can get by with this, or maybe there's really no consequence, as we heard in a sermonette, with this sin, so I can get by with that. So we carry out the malice, which creates wickedness. So we're admonished here by Paul, very clearly, to make sure that the sin we get out is the spiritual sin. The leaven we get out is the spiritual leaven. Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 6. The verse before the first one we read here in 1 Corinthians chapter 5. 1 Corinthians 5, verse 6, your glorying is not good. They seem to be proud of their atmosphere of tolerance for sin. Your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? A little sin germinates more sin, just like leaven does in the bread, puffs it up. I think we all understand and know that. Okay, let's go to Galatians. See what Paul wrote to the church at Galatia. Galatians 5, verse 7. Galatians 5, verse 7. This principle is reiterated by Paul to the church at Galatia. He says, you ran well, verse 7, Galatians 5. Who hindered you from obeying the truth? Who stood in your way from doing what God instructed us to do? This persuasion does not come from him who calls you. Who is the obstacle in most cases for our falling prey to sin? Not getting the leaven out. It's Satan, isn't it? Who has built a world around us that calls for us to be worldly. Who calls for us to be hypocritical. Who calls for us to drift doctrinally. This persuasion, verse 8, does not come from him who calls you. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. He repeats that concept. So what happens if we leave a little of that sin in there? We kind of harbor that pet that we have, whether it's a doctrinal pet or whether it's a habit of carnality or whether it's a mindset or whether it's just a habit that is ungodly. It's not God, is it? That should behoove us that the purpose of keeping the days of unleavened bread is to remind us of our need to remove sin from our lives. Not just get rid of it in our houses, in our cars, in our desk, but to get it out of our lives. Not just for 7 days out of the year, but all the time. To constantly work to remove the leaven that Christ talked about and that Paul talks about out of our lives. Because if we leave a little bit in there, guess what happens? A little leaven leavens the whole lump. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So this is the heart of why we're still required to put leaven out of our homes. It reminds us of something bigger and much more important than just leaven. Leaven represents sin, and de-leavening our homes symbolizes our desire to purge sin and spiritual leaven from our lives and overcoming. God wants us to observe the days of unleavened bread year after year to remind us that we are not perfect and that our lives are constantly struggling against sin. And the leaven that is out there in the atmosphere all the time to attack our Christian endeavors. So when we de-leaven our homes, we find that no matter how hard we try, you cannot find every little crumb. And how many of you, like me and Linda, have found about midway through the days of unleavened bread, oh no, that candy bar I've got in my briefcase has got leaven in it. One year I discovered that the top of the wedding cake that we were keeping was leavened. Been in the freezer for 3 years. We're going to eat it someday on our anniversary. Oh, boom! It's one of those moments. We've all experienced those, haven't we? When I first went to Ambassador College, I remember it was a Sabbath, and I usually went down to Ma Tucker's and had a hamburger. And during the days of unleavened bread, I just lost my mind. Went down to Ma Tucker's and ordered a hamburger, and I was halfway through my hamburger, and I looked over, and there's two of my classmates looking at me, smiling at me, saying, "Dave, you enjoying your hamburger?" They were both eating salads. I thought, that's stupid. They like hamburgers. Why are they eating salads? They said, "You enjoying your hamburger, Dave?" They said it twice. I looked down at my hamburger, and it hit me. It's got a bun on it, and it's leavened. And here I am eating a hamburger in the middle of the days of unleavened bread. It's easy to make that mistake, isn't it? It's another reminder, isn't it, that leaven so easily can come into our lives. Even though we make the conscious effort to say, "I'm not going to do it for 7 days to remind me of this important spiritual principle." Of course, I'm sure everybody in this room has never messed up like Dave has messed up, right? See a lot of people going, "I'm going to invent the unleavened hamburger," right? So, removing sin from our lives is hard work. Overcoming is challenging. The days of unleavened bread remind us annually of this constant warfare that all Christians must wage throughout their lives. I'd like to conclude by going to a couple of scriptures in Revelation. Revelation chapter 2, verse 7. I'd like to read the admonition to every one of the seven churches that are listed here. We know these messages were given to seven congregations on a mail route in Asia Minor. But we also know that the message applies to Christians everywhere for all time. And one thing you will notice is that the message to all seven churches is consistent. Revelation chapter 2, verse 7. "He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, I will give to eat from the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of God." To him who overcomes. Let's drop down to verse 11. "He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. He who overcomes shall not be hurt by the second death." Overcomes what? The leaven of the Pharisees? The leaven of the Sadducees? The leaven of Herod? Sin, right? That's what it's talking about. Let's drop down to verse 17. "He who has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. To him who overcomes, I will give some of the hidden manna to eat." Verse 26. "And he who overcomes and keeps my works until the end, to him I will give power over the nations." The common thread is overcoming. The days of unleavened bread remind us of our goal as Christians is to continue to overcome the leaven around us. Chapter 3 and verse 5. He who overcomes shall be clothed in white garments, and I will not blot out his name from the book of life, but I will confess his name before my Father and before his angels." Once again, the common theme of the messages to all of the churches, to all of us, is we must be overcomers. That's the major lesson of the days of unleavened bread for us. Verse 12, Revelation 3, verse 12. "He who overcomes, I will make him a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall not go out no more. I will write on him the name of my God and the name of the city of my God, the New Jerusalem." Verse 21. Revelation 3, verse 21. "To him who overcomes, I will grant to sit with me on my throne, as I also overcame and sat down with my Father on his throne." This is the outcome that we want from the days of unleavened bread, is to remind us of our constant struggle as Christians to overcome the leaven of this world. The leaven of the Sadducees, the leaven of the Pharisees, the leaven of Herod, and the leaven of sin. I think it's pretty clear what God desires for us during the days of unleavened bread and the message that God has for us. It is not so much to clean our houses and our cars and our desks. It is more to clean our minds and our hearts and to focus on that part, because we must be willing to overcome and constantly work to put sin out of our lives.